So, where are we holding?
Okay, we are holding in Masechet Sanhedrin 28a2, Kafchet Amud Aleph, in Sugya, which is not so easy unless you're a genealogist or a guy who likes to do family trees.
Even then, the English is weird.
Yep, meaning the Hebrew is weird, and the English translation
is... The English translation is weird. For example, they use great uncle.
Yeah,
a great uncle would be your grandfather's father, brother.
For me, a great uncle is your uncle who buys you sweets or buys you, right? He's a great uncle. I don't know the word that means no. When someone says the word great uncle, I get no picture whatsoever in my head of what that actually means.
That's sometimes
they don't know what it means. I don't know what to
talk
about. Sometimes they translate it. Well, he doesn't know what it is. He doesn't know what it is. Then we're in real trouble because they're a lot more learned than we are.
Have you ever done a family tree?
Once, very badly, yes. We didn't manage to fill money in. I don't have much in the way of...
Because we were trying to track down everyone. I don't know whether they're still on the computer or not. I think we emailed everyone.
Yeah, there's a lot of family tree software out there on the net at the moment. Very, very nice one. Aha! Aha! Tov. So, with that small introduction, we can begin.
Okay.
All right.
28A.
So let's refresh where we're learning.
Was it Kuf Hei?
Kafchet. Yes.
Kafchet.
Very good. Kafchet Amud Aleph. 28A. Right. We're about halfway down, about a third of the way down the page. Yeah. We left off yesterday without answering our question. We left off yesterday with a question. What was the question? The question was like this. We learned in our Mishnah the laws of those who are disqualified from giving testimony. And we learned it from the Pasuk, that the sons are not put to death on account of the fathers, and the fathers are not put to death on account of the sons. We said the plural, Avot and Banim, gave us two fathers and two sons. Avot, plural. Father. Another father. And their sons, son. Right? And that's what we learned out from the phrase Avot u'banim. Right? Roughly speaking. He can't testify against him, he can't testify against him, he can't testify.
Right. Now, did we figure out whether the son can testify against the other son?
Yes, we also figured out that from the word banim, the plural banim, two sons also included the fact that he can also not testify against him. So now the Gemara said, so now I've learned that. I also want to know, how do I learn out? Is it true? Can I learn out the fact that actually, two of these forbidden relatives can't be in the witness box together, not testifying one against the other, but they can't actually testify together in the witness box. Witnesses. Can these two banim be witnesses? That was a question.
Now, we came up with a strange case where you had three separate brothers and a non-relative, and
yes,
each brother was testifying on whether the person owned or was owned the property for 3 years.
Each one testified for 1 year.
But they each had information on 1 year.
Correct.
And the non-relative had testimony on 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So they matched it up.
Right.
Now, the
What do we learn from that?
That if they're false witnesses.
Yes, then what happens?
Then, with one of the brothers and non-relatives as a false witness, then they're implicating the other brothers, at least the ones who swore.
Right, so we had a rule that we're trying to prove. From that Mishnah, the Gemara wanted to say like this. The reason why we know that you can't have these two people in the witness box together is because we have a rule in Hazamah. The rule in Hazamah is that until all witnesses are made Hazam, Huzam, they're both falsified, they don't get punished. They don't get punished. So if we only have witnessing against one of them, two witnesses come along and say, this guy was with us on that day and that date, and therefore his testimony is false. He doesn't get punished with what he tried to do until this one also has to be Hazamah. Why not? Because one person by himself could not have caused the punishment. Only when both of them together, not together, but both of them get falsified, then they can together have caused the result that they were trying to achieve, and therefore we can give to them what they tried to achieve. But one person by himself can't achieve anything. One witness by himself is meaningless. So even though one witness is validly Huzamified, it's meaningless unless there's all of the witnesses. So we don't punish him until the other one is also found to be guilty of Hazamah.
So in this case, we're talking about there are four witnesses, three brothers and a non-relative.
Hold on, before we get to the second case. So in the first case, the proof we wanted to, the argument we were trying to bring is, if we see that the only reason one witness is getting the penalty is because of the fact that the other witness also testified falsely and was found to be false, then we have a problem that he is being killed on account of him. That was the argument. We're seeing that if his punishment is dependent on him also being found to be Hazamah witness, then it turns out that the reason he's getting punished is only because of him. His testimony is false. And therefore we fall into this problem of Ulkot Banim. The son is being killed on account of the father, or the father, or someone on account of the other one. And therefore we learn, says the truth, that we can't have this situation. It can't arise. We can't allow that situation to arise because it would go against the Torah. Gemara then brought that Mishnah, and that disproved it. Because we saw from that Mishnah, what? We learned that even though you have a case where the we learned what did we learn? What was the proof from that?
Well, only one of the brothers and a non-relative was convicted, but the other two brothers were not.
They weren't causing each other to be punished. Nahon, but what was the proof from the second Mishnah? Why did we bring the second Mishnah with the three brothers? So this is a problem. So the Gemara said like this. Right. So far up to here, good. Yeah. So far up to here, good. So that was the proposal, the hypothesis. The Gemara says, you see, you can't have these two together because it would result. The result would happen if he would be dying on account of him. Can't happen. Therefore, we learn from them, they can never be two witnesses together. Can't be. We can never allow that situation to be. So therefore, you can't have two of these witnesses in the witness box together. So then the Gemara says, I can disprove that. How? By the Mishnah. What did the Mishnah came along to say? The Mishnah came along to say, with the case of the three brothers. Three bros. Right? The three bros, what's the problem with this? This is a Mishnah. This Mishnah said, when you have this case of three brothers, the law of that Mishnah was that
they are separate for, what's the wording, the Mishnah? They are
something like external.
Separate for testimony, but together, separate testimony, together, Hazama. Right, that was the Mishnah in brief. It said, in the case of three brothers, they're separate for testimony, but they're together for Hazama. What does it mean? It meant that you could have the three brothers testifying separately. They're separate. One, two, three. Another. Right, they're separate for testimony. That's okay, that's allowed. But you should know that they're together for Hazama. If you want to make them his own, you have to Hazama all three of them together. They're joined as a package for Hazama. Why they're joined as a package? Because unless you have all of them Hazam, then they wouldn't have caused the loss. They only caused the loss when they proved 3 years. So each one by themselves only proves 1 year, doesn't prove anything. So each one by himself never caused the loss, because he couldn't prove anything by himself. Only all three together, they prove the Hazakah 3 years together. So therefore you need all of them in order to have a case of Hazama, where you do to them what they're trying to do. Because by themselves, they can't do anything. So if we only manage to Hazum one couple, one brother, he doesn't get the punishment until all of them get falsified, and then we can punish them all.
Plus the non-relative.
Yeah, plus him. Right? But only at that point Hazama takes place. Okay, so that's just the word. So how does that Mishnah help me? So what we learned is this. This goes against what we said. Why? Because this is an actual case. This case exists. Mishnah says, if you have three brothers, this is what the rule is. Meaning, this case exists. There is such a thing. There is such a thing as having three brothers, and there is such a case as having Hazama over the whole thing. If you have Hazama in this case, it means, effectively, he's getting punished because of him. He's getting punished because of him. And we just said, that's not allowed. You couldn't allow this one to be punished on account of him.
But
so it can't. So the result of this is, it can't be that it's the Hazama, which is the law, which prevents this happening.
But by
we said it's Hazama. Well, hold on. We said it's Hazama, which is the reason why we can never have two witnesses in the witness box together. And now we're learning what's not true. We have a case here where Hazama takes place. And we do have it as an existing case, as a Mishnah brought a case. It exists. We do allow this. Even though they're all Hazama together, meaning they are all reliant on each other. And we said that was a reason it could never happen. So that can't be the reasoning over here. It's not Hazama. The reason why two sons do whatever can't be in a witness box together is not because they might be Hazama together and they might do one to the other. It has to be a different reason. So Gemara's now going to say the reason, okay, is something else. So this was the what we brought in. We're going to ignore it now because that just shows that this was a wrong reasoning. We had our hypothesis, we tried it out, and this disproves it. Yes, now.
Okay. They're not only responsible for each other, but they each gave false testimony.
Yes, that's why they became Hazama witnesses. Therefore,
not necessary.
They
did get false testimony. They said, I was there at the
time. People said that they did.
Well, assuming it is, we're assuming for these purposes they did give false testimony, otherwise, we're told.
I mean, by definition.
Yeah. A definition, in order to be Hazama witnesses, we accept that they gave false testimony. Told. Okay, so now we've thrown that out. So now we're back to our question. How is it that two sons, for example, can't be in the witness box together? So it's not because of Hazama. Must be a different reason. So what's the reason instead? So now we're back in the Gemara. Yofi. Ella and Cain. Okay, we're about 12 lines down, middle of the line. Ella im ken, aleph, chipchuk, chaf. have to know the word chipchuk in Hebrew if you're learning Gemara. Chipchuk is one of the most important words. Chipchuk is a...
Is that a real word?
It's the abbreviation when you have two letters. Aleph, chipchuk, taf, imken. So we're at the chipchuk. I don't know if it's a real word. I've heard it from somewhere. So, ela imken. So, ela, rather, what's the answer? Instead of what we learn, it can't be that. Ela imken, lichtov, kra, uben, alavot. The answer is not so exciting. This was a much more exciting solution. The actual solution that the Gemara rests on as the reason why we can't have two relatives in the witness box together is because in Ken, if so, lichtov kra, then it would have written in the scripture, right, in the Torah, uben al avot, inami, or alternatively, hem al avot. It could have said ben, and it said banim, banim al avot. When actually we could have learned the same rule out by saying ben alavot, or inami, alternatively it could have said hem, them alavot. It doesn't need to repeat the word banim. We said avot or banim, or banim alavot. We could have just said fathers on the sons and them on the fathers. The Torah doesn't is extremely medayek,
exacting
in its use of wording. If there's no need to say the word and you said it, then there's a reason why you said it. Otherwise it would have been written in the shortest form possible. Right, we don't add, if we needed to say Ben, so say Ben, don't say Banim. We needed to say, we could have said them. We don't need to say the word Banim again. So because you can use either of those, the Gemara is saying here, either because it said Banim when it could have said Ben, or alternatively, you could say differently that it could have said hem, them, instead of saying the word banim again. My banim, why does it say banim? Afilu banim la'alma. Even banim, these are the banim that we're talking about, so again, we're learning from the banim to everybody else in the tree. Banim la'alma, banim, even by themselves, like together, against anyone else. That banim brought us this extra, it's not learned out from a svara, diuka, intellectual argument, it's learned out from an extraneous word. That's the reason why we can't have two relatives together in the witness box, because of the word banim. So, okay. Next, Gemara says Ashkachan Kerovei Ha'av. Now we've learned out, we found Ashkachan Kerovei Ha'av, the relatives of the father. Kerovei Ha'em Minalan. But what about relatives of the mother? Right, in our list of on the Mishnah, everyone who was listed was paternal relatives, if you like. Achi Aviv, Achi Avot, Baal, this one, right?
They were talking about inheritance.
No, the Mishnah itself is just talking about who's disqualified.
I mean, it's somewhere in here where they were talking about the reason for that is because of the inheritance is normally to the father. I forget where.
Yeah, but a different point. It's not relevant for this bit. What we're learning now is why did the Mishnah, when it listed them out by referring to the paternal side and not the maternal side? Not the maternal. Where's the footnote? Such as one's mother's brother. Hold on. No. Let me start again. That's not what the Gemara is trying to say. The Gemara Let's start again. It makes more sense. Right. The Mishnah listed out all the different rules, but included maternal and paternal. It includes both. In the Mishnah, we do have the sister's husband, we have the mother's brother, right? We have the relatives via the mother, by the women. We do have that. So now the question the Gemara is, what's my source for that? When I learned the source originally, I learned Avot Uvanim. Avot Uvanim is paternal line. There's no mothers and sisters involved in Avot Uvanim, fathers and sons. You're going to teach me fathers and sons. Fine, so I can learn out fathers and sons can't be in the witness box, and any combination of fathers and sons can't be in the witness box. But what I want to bring in is maternal relatives, right? The mother's sister's husband, right? How do I know that they're also disqualified? I can't learn that out from just the word Avot Uvanim. There must be a separate source that can learn out the maternal side as well is also disqualified. Yeah? Answer? Huh? Yeah, so what's the answer? Amor, Amakra, Avot, Avot. Says the word fathers twice. How does that help me then? We're talking fathers, right? Trezim day, two times. Im Eno Inyan Likrove Ha'av, Tanehu Inyan Likrove Ha'em. Give it to the. So what's it saying? It's saying like this. Say inside and then say outside. It says if it's not used for relatives of the father, use it for relatives of the mother. So the fact is, we say the word Avot twice. One of them is superfluous. We don't need Avot twice. So how do I get from Avot to M? So there's a scriptural rule. The scriptural rule is, one of the laws of learning out is that if you have something that you don't need, you can learn it out even for the opposite. Right? Even, I don't need the word Avot to teach me fathers, so I'm learning it to teach me mothers. Meaning, what's it meaning? Either you can look at it two ways. Either Dafka teaches me the opposite. Instead of teaching me fathers, teach me mothers. Or the word Avot is extra and it's inclusive. Including even mothers. Fathers is a generic term for antecedents. Right? Fathers. And the fact that it comes to tell me twice means that I can now use that word to and expand it to its largest meaning, which includes mothers, so to speak. That's one way of learning it. Or it means dafka. No, it just means the opposite. Don't learn it out meaning men, learning out meaning women, which is just a svara of Torah learning. That you can take something and even use it for the opposite meaning, because it's you could don't learn it out for itself, learn it out for something else. That's what the learning is called.
You could say that the word Avot has a feminine ending to include women.
Maybe. I don't know. It's good, yeah. Why does Avot have a feminine meaning? It's a question. I mean, it's a good question anyway on the word Avot. Why? It doesn't seem to me the word Avot grammatically needs to be Avot. Why can't it be as in?
You couldn't say that about
Avot. Huh?
You couldn't say that about mother,
that
has
right.
Why does Avot have a feminine ending to
Gedalia, you have any comments? I like to try and bring you into the.
I was listening.
Why do we think the word Avot has a feminine ending? Why are we? Doesn't seem to be any reason, like grammatically, logically, why you can't have Avim. Right? Avot. It's very. It's a bit of a strange one. But we're trying to say we're learning out here from the use of the word Avot twice. The second Avot is superfluous, and therefore we're using it to learn out mothers.
Even more shocking, okay.
That's the right. That's the Gemara on how we learn out the maternal, because they use the word Avot twice.
Wow, okay.
Well, Abraham was saying there's a remnant in the fact that Avot has a feminine ending.
Ah, okay.
Stop it.
Okay.
Nice. Okay.
Sounds good.
So, Chiddush. You could keep your. I'll be writing our book of Chiddushim.
I'll look at all the other.
good. That's good. One of the Gedolim would write Chidushim. Even when he was not a Gadol, right? When he was young, like you and me, right? We're not yet Gedolim, so we're also in that category. We also not yet Gadol, right? So, Tov, we can learn from people who weren't yet a Gadol, and we're also not yet Gadol, right? What did he do? So when he was learning, he would write down his Chidushim in a little book. Just had like, he had a book for scribbling or whatever, but he had a special Chidushim book. You can buy them in the bookstore. They have like Chidushim. Very nice. So you write down your Chidushim, and then he would learn them every Shabbos. Like get on Shabbat, he would like to give him Tanug, like Tanug or Shabbos, to go through. Even though then, for me, whatever, it means completely wrong, completely going nowhere. Obviously, a very bad thing. But for me, if we get Chidush. To do that on Shabbat is a very big thing.
They're great for class notes, and you can have them engraved.
You can have them engraved?
Yes, with gold or silver lettering.
Are you offering that as a service?
No. The cast destroyed one of Joelle's books that she was using in Midrashah. And so we had to replace that. We had to get one for Sharon, who's in Midrashah now.
Oh, so I could do the engraving.
Yeah. And we're getting one for, we got one for Ruckel for next year.
Tov, okay. Very good. Anyway, so it's good to write down your Chiddushim. And to learn them on Shabbat. Tov. And if you want even extra double points, try and explain them to your wife. You see, it's like, I bought, and then it means like, and she's like, that's good? You like that? That's interesting for you? Imahot. Ima Aleph Mem
Hey
Bav Taf Ima Hot. So that's if you have many mothers. One mother is usually enough for anyone. Your feet, Tov. Anyway, Tov. Next question: the Gemara. So far, what have we found? We found the father, mother, uncle, brother, son. We found two sons, two of them together, can't be in the winner's box. And now we found also the maternal side, the sisters and mothers of that pentagram. No, I just made that up. Of that table over there. Next, Ashkahan l'chova. We found for chova l'zuchut manalan. What about zuchut? So what's the question? We found for chova, and what about zuchut? What does it mean that we found for chova? We have a source from the Torah that teaches us about chova. Shekeach, Rav Hillel.
Did you an octogram?
Huh?
Octogram.
No.
Eight sides.
No, for this one. For,
to give him a sentence that could harm them, or
yeah,
less than God.
Yeah, fair. And no, a negative. So we found the negative. Why? Because the Torah says you're not allowed to kill them on account of each other. You're not allowed to kill them on account of each other. You're not allowed to testify negatively. You're not allowed to cause them a detriment. Yofi, a father can't cause a detriment to a son, and a son can't cause it. But what about if he's testifying in his favor? Maybe you're allowed to do that, because the Torah just says you can't go against them. Right? Maybe if you want to testify that actually this belongs to him, right? Testimony, maybe you're allowed to do that. That's a vot for them, and the Torah doesn't prevent you from going for them.
Except the Zoman and the
witness. Why?
That's, if you testify, then you could possibly be a Zoman and the witness.
Okay.
Which
would be negative.
Which would be negative.
So that's what we're saying. So the reason why we've got so far is because they're all negative. You're causing the Zomim cause a negative. We saw this. We don't go by Zomim. Zomim is not the reason. We threw that out. But even if you want to stick with Zomim, the reason for Zomim is because the Zomim witness is causing a negative thing to happen to his co-witness. But what about if you're causing a positive thing to happen? Maybe you're allowed to do that. But we see you're not, right? The Gemara says you're disqualified, full stop. It doesn't say. So now the Gemara says, so what's the source? So the source I've got so far doesn't teach me that. So what's the source that prohibits the positive? Answer, Amakra yumtu. Same learning. He will be put to death, right? That what's the pasuk which says lo yumtu avot al banim, ubanima lo yumtu al avot. Right? We had the word yumtu twice. He won't be put to death on account of him, and he won't be put to death on account of him. Why do you tell me twice? Could you just tell me? He won't be put to death on account of him, and not him on account of him. You know you're talking about the same thing. You don't need to say, and he will not be put to death in the second half of the verse. Answer, if you're not learning it out for one, you can learn it out for the opposite, which then goes against right, the two reasons I gave last time, goes to on the second one. Right? We're now learning it out for the opposite. Don't learn yumtu out to be negative, learn yumtu out even for the positive. Therefore, we've learned out tenehu im eino inyan lechova, tenehu inyan lezuchut. If you don't learn it out for a chova, for an obligation, learn it out for a zuchut, a benefit.
Actually, Talmud helps you find chidushim because it teaches you how you can use psukim and how you can.
Yeah, 100%. And now you'll see that when you're reading Torah, you're gonna see the best way of, if you want, like some people like making chidushim. If you want to make chidushim and like really learn the Torah, what I found was very nice to do is don't learn it from your art scroll. Don't open your art scroll siddur, right? Because it's already punctuated and vowelized and whatever. Get a tikkun. Just learn it straight from the text itself. No punctuation, no nothing. Right? And you start to see that actually there's a whole other things going on. Right? Because the words aren't vowelized like they're vowelized. It doesn't mean this actually. We're saying something completely different. Start reading the Torah. You can't like learn that out because that would be wrong. But you can learn chidoshim and droshim from that. It's very nice. Anyway. So now we found also the source for not only chava but also for benefits for zuchut. Next, ashkechan b'dinei nefashot. We've learned out dinei nefashot, b'dinei mamonot minalan. What about dinei mamonot? Right, we learned that these people can't testify against each other. How can they not? Because we're not allowed to put one to death on account of the other. Yeah, but that's dinei nefashot. That's capital crimes. What about testifying in a civil case? Maybe they're just not allowed to cause a capital case. What about civil case? Maybe you can testify in a civil case, in a monetary case. How do I know you can't even testify in a monetary case?
What is monetary?
Monetary mamon.
Benetry?
Monetary. Money. Right?
Shekels.
So how do I know? How do I know that all of these rules that we're learning now also apply to civil monetary cases? Amakra, because we have a pasuk which says, Mishpat echad yeh lachem. One law you will have for all of them. Mishpat hashaveh lachem. Meaning the mishpat, the judgment is equal for them. Them meaning the between the civil and the capital. We use this pasuk a number of times. This pasuk is used a number of times when we're learning out laws from the Torah. So, because often the Torah talks about a particular scenario, it's talking about capital crimes, or it happens to be talking about civil money, the compensation. And then we want to learn, but does this rule also apply to capital, the nefashot, or the other way around? So the Gemara will often bring this, Mishpat Echad Yelachem. You have one law for everything. Right? So even though we happen to be learning in the context of a capital crime, we have one law. The law of capital crime, like for example, witnesses. Witnesses have to be examined in capital crimes in a certain way to check that they're true. And then the Gemara asks, yeah, but what about witnesses in a civil crime? You also have to examine them carefully too. She says, yeah, one law for each one, the same law, right? You have the same rules, bring them over from the capital offence and put them into the monetary. Not in everything, some things are different, right? But most of the time, this rule applies to it. And so therefore, we now know that all of these disqualifications apply also in civil, even though the source for the law was found in Dine Nefashot, you won't put to death sons on account of fathers. We have a rule which brings over everything from there to there. having a scriptural check. Yes. What have you found, Rabbi Abraham? Vayikra kaf dalet kaf bet. If you've mishpat achad, yelachem keger keezrach yeh.
See, that's what I thought.
It's talking over there about something different. It's not talking about one law you should have for this court system and for that court system. Yeah, he was learning about the ger and the ezrach, right? That the non-Jew and the resident of the land, that law also applies to him, right? Some places the law applies also to people who are living in the land, not for everything. We don't make them keep Shabbos, but we do make them not kill anyone, right? Or whatever, some laws apply. So in those cases, the Torah says, one law you'd have for you and for them. But here, Tafka takes the one, why? Because Mishpat Echad, Mishpat meaning judgment, meaning process judgment, Mishpat.
He says here, even the Mar, it's Shabbat. The judge should be one, should be Shabbat, both to the resident and the foreigner.
Okay, but I hear your reasoning, but this is used a lot elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
He says, as already noted in the Gemara on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, note 1. Let's see that. Gimel Amud Aleph, 3a. You did have it before. He says, as noted earlier, 3a, note 1. So he says, why? Because the previous verse, in this note, it says, the previous verse to Mishpat Echad says, Umakeh behema ishalemna umakeh adam yumat. One who hits an animal shall pay for it, and one who kills a person shall be put to death. And then it says Mishpat Echad. So you've got a civil case, murder case, and then it says Mishpat Echad. So again, depending on where you put the full stop in the Torah, you're either going on that bit or you're going on. Nice.
That's
it. Yeah. Very good. Yeah, said that you looked at that. We learned a whole. Okay. Tom, how are we doing? Time, your feet. Tinted. Now. Okay, now the next bit. We need some board space. That was the easy bit. Now we're going back into our family tree software. As follows. Amar Rav. Rav says like this. Achi Abba lo ya'id li. Let's go slowly. Achi Abba. Achi Abba. Right. Father. Right, he's talking about his father. Achi Abba means, right, so this is me. Right, this is, I'm calling it Rav. Right, Rav's talking about himself. Right, Rav. Achi Abba, the father of his brother, uncle. Achi Abba, lo ya'id li, cannot testify against me or for me, right? So far, so good. We know that. Who? Him? Ubano v'chatzno. Neither him nor his son. Son is cousin, yeah? Like my cousin, that makes sense? Right, my cousin. Nor him, nor his son, nor his chotno. What's his chotno? No. Chotno means his son-in-law.
Chatano.
Chatano.
If the son-in-law and the chotno is the father-in-law.
Oh yeah? Top.
Chotin.
Ah, top. Top.
And mechutan is the
in-laws.
Yeah.
Top. Okay, so was it chotno?
Chatano.
Chatano. Hatano is his son-in-law. What does son-in-law mean? It means his daughter by her husband. Right, son-in-law. Right? So that's Rav's rule. Rav's rule is he can't testify for me, and neither him nor him.
They're all on the same plane, for lack of a better word.
No, we're going to see they're not. The argument is that they're not. Let's see why not. And I can't testify for him, and now he says it's the same the other way around. I can't testify for him. Lo ani, neither me, ubeni, v'chatani. Neither me, my son, or my son-in-law. Right? Can't testify against him. Right? This is the him. He can't testify against me, neither him nor his son or his son-in-law. And I can't testify against him, neither me against him, nor my son, nor my son-in-law against him.
So it's right? Three generations.
That's what generations is a difficult word to use here, because we've got some people who are on the same level, they're not really generations. The Gemara is now going to bring in the concept of how far removed are you? How far removed are you away from the one you're testifying against? In what sense? So not necessarily in the sense of generations. Generations would be an example. But what we've got here is the Gemara is going to say like this. We're going to hold that this, we're going to say, is level one. This, they're one. To each other, they're level one. Right? He can't testify against him. They're brothers. Brothers is really the closest natural relationship. So they're called level one. Because not even more than a father and a son, which are a different generation. Right? But the brothers are on the same. So they're a level one. When we come down to here, that's already at level two. Right? Rav's now he's at level two. And his son is now at a level three. Here, the son of the uncle, right, is a level two. And the question is, what relationship is he? Is he also a two, because he's like a son, or he's actually a three because it goes via the daughter to the son-in-law? So his option is, he could be a three, or he could be a four.
He could be a one and a half.
Here, two, he could be also, what's the relationship down to the son of the three? Here, the same question. He's a three or a four? Right? That's the question that the Gemara is going to be dealing with.
It could be a one and a half and a two and a half.
Huh?
It could be a one and a half and a two and a half. It's like where? Giving him a full level.
Where?
A son and four.
No, it has to be A level. The levels we're giving, we're making them up ourselves. We're saying this is one, this is two, this is three. So is he on the same or is he on a different one? Three or four or three to three and a half is the same thing. We're just moving him off that level. Is he on the same level or is he a lower one? 3, 3.1, doesn't matter. Is he on the, or is he, that's the question here. Because the question is going to be, if we know threes we know for sure can't testify against one. So the question is, can anyone who's more removed than a three, if he's also a three, so fine, he's also disqualified. But if he's less, if he's already on a four, then he should be okay.
Question. The Rav, the son is number two.
No.
Why do we go from the Rav, not go from the father?
Because we're starting at the primary level of closeness to the one that we're going against. From him, we're going against him.
So he's the subject. He's the object. Subject, object, whatever. He's the, right, from him, he's number one.
So
going down from him. No, no, we're going from him. And we're saying, according to him, who can testify against this guy? So from him, we have to look and see where these people are related to him.
All these people are mentioned in the Mishnah.
Right, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah,
they're all they're mentioned all, in the Mishnah, but we're trying to find out what level.
No, and so the question is, we're going to see that they're not mentioned in the Mishnah. Apparently, if I've understood correctly,
it says geese, brother-in-law. Doesn't say sister, brother. It says brother-in-law, geese.
Father-in-law,
and it says the geese and even his children and their chatanim.
No, so apparently this. The son-in-laws at this level are not mentioned in the Mishnah. The footnote says here, this is Rav's Chiddush. Rav's Chiddush is that these sons-in-law, who are not mentioned in the Mishnah, are also disqualified.
They're not mentioned.
But I'm looking at the Mishnah.
Right. Only
but I'm looking at the Mishnah, it says.
Okay, so where do you see the Mishnah?
What
do you see?
These are the relatives who are disqualified.
Yeah.
They're one's brother, his father's brother, his mother's brother, his sister's husband,
yeah.
His father's sister's husband, and his mother's sister's husband,
yeah.
And his mother's husband, his father-in-law,
yeah.
His brother-in-law.
Yeah.
They are.
Who is the his referring to? Not referring to this situation.
No, these are relatives who are disqualified.
Yeah. Yeah, go on.
His mother's sister, his mother's husband, his father-in-law, his brother-in-law, their sons and their son-in-laws.
Yeah, so I think I understand what the question is. When it says in there that their sons and sons-in-law are forbidden from testifying, it means that their sons, right, and their son-in-laws are forbidden from testifying against them. It doesn't mean that they're forbidden from testifying all the way over to the other side of the page. It means they and their sons-in-law are forbidden from testifying against them. It doesn't mean that they're forbidden from testifying against anyone who's already over here. We don't connect. Am I making sense? The fact that it says your sons are not allowed to testify. If it just said your son, you're right. Your son's not allowed to testify means that your son's not allowed to testify against you. Doesn't mean your son's not allowed to testify against your uncle. Where do you get that from? You're right. It says your son, but it wasn't talking about in relation to your uncle.
Okay.
And over here it is. Over here, that's what we're saying. The sons-in-law of me are not allowed to testify against the uncle. And that's the chiddush. Where does he get that from? It's not in the Mishnah. That's what the Gemara is going to say. Rav says, my father's uncle, neither me nor my son nor my sons-in-law. Very nice, but where's your source for that? That's not what our Mishnah says.
That's what I'm saying. It's contradicting the Mishnah.
That is mentioned in the Mishnah.
Which is?
And his son-in-law can't testify against him.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine. That's not a problem.
The other one is.
You're not saying that. Rav's saying against versus him. This is against him. Right? That's his kiddush. That's what this writer from Rav is saying. This ruling from Rav. So, the Gemara says, wait a minute. Why is that? Why is it the case? How can Rav say that? Havelei shlishi berishon. This would result in a shlishi testifying against the rishon. We're calling him three for the moment. Three against the one. Right? And three against the one. Shlishi rishon. Va'anan sheni b'sheni tanan. We learned in the Mishnah a second can disqualify a second. Shanei rishon tanan. Sheni rishon tanan. And a second can testify against the first. Shlishi berishon latanan. But a third against a one we didn't learn. Right? We never learned three against one. We learned two against two. He can't testify against him. Right? Remember the father and the son. We learned he can't go against him, and he can't go against him, he can't go against him. But we didn't learn in the Mishnah anywhere it says he can't, three against one. We never learned that relationship is disqualified.
So we're talking about basically a one son testifying against the grandfather, for lack of a better word.
No, it's grandfather's brother.
One testifying against three?
Yeah, we didn't learn this submission. This is what Rabbi said.
Three against one
we didn't learn. We never learned that disqualification.
We learned
all these four, yeah. He can't go against him, he can't go against all of that we learned. Yeah. But we didn't learn from here down.
That is one to three, this one?
This one to him?
Yeah.
Apparently not. No, according to what he's saying now, we didn't even learn that. Mishnah didn't ever taught us son against grandfather, grandson against grandfather. We never learned that in Mishnah either.
We covered that, didn't we?
Right, it should be two and three. Yeah.
Yes, but she's not included because we're never going against her. She's never in the witness box. I'm ignoring her.
No, but there was a footnote somewhere.
As a two or a three, right? Should be a two or three. One, two, yeah. Exactly. Sorry, two or three. Very good. Yeah, two or three.
There's a footnote somewhere about that earlier on in the Mishnah.
About what?
Grandson. I'm trying to find it.
Tough. Well, we'll get to there because the grandson is covered in this one anyway, right? Because one against three, because the grandson is a one and a three, right? So let's see from here. So what's the answer? How can Rav say you can have one against three if our Mishnah doesn't allow it, or doesn't talk about it? It's not in the Mishnah.
So
answer? Huh?
Because I asked you yesterday.
Yeah.
Grandfather.
Yeah. So now we're gonna learn. So now we're gonna see. So this is the answer. Right, because we haven't got to the day yet, so that's why I didn't know it. Tov. Baruch Hashem. Tov. So then the Gemara says, what's an answer for Rav? So Rav answers like this. It is in the Mishnah. You just didn't read the Mishnah properly. Rav answers, my reading of the Mishnah does allow one to three. How? My chatano the katane b'matnitim. What's the word chatano that you see in our Mishnah? When our Mishnah says son-in-law, in our Mishnah, what does it mean? Chatan b'no. It means the son's son-in-law. It doesn't mean chatano like you understood it in the Pshat. It also includes the son's son-in-law. Right? We thought that chatano meant him, his, and his chatano, daughter, and son. Right? So you thought it meant this one. That's a chatano. Right? Daughter and the son. But actually, it means also his son's son-in-law. It does mean him. Chatanah. Why he understands that, it wasn't so clear to me to why Chatanah could also mean that.
So this is where we get the laws of all.
So then the Gemara questions and says, but wait a minute, if that's true, that Chatanah really means his son's son-in-law. So, v'litnei ben benah. Why does it just say it? Ben Benah, the son of his son. Right? If that's what it meant, why not write it? Answer. The Gemara didn't write it in that way. The Mishnah didn't write it in that way. Milta agav orche, kamash malan, deba'al be'ishtok. Right? The Mishnah wrote it in the way of Chatanah in order to teach me another rule at the same time. Right? The fact that the Gemara or the Mishnah can teach me two rules at once is a useful thing. Right, so I can keep everything compact. So the word chatanot teach me that the husband is like the wife. That's what the second learning I can get out of that is. That the husband is like the wife. Why is the husband like the wife? Huh? Milta agav orche kashmalan, the baal keishto. Milta agav, a thing agav on the back of orche of what it's found of this thing kashmalan. It comes to teach us the baal keishto that a husband is like a wife. Tov, we're over our time by a few minutes, so we're going to stop there and give me time to work out.